Welcome to PsychRevise, your go-to podcast for A-level psychology exam prep. I'm your host, and today we're diving deep into one of the most fascinating and clinically relevant topics on the WJEC specification, addictive behaviors. Whether you're sitting your exam in a few weeks or just starting to get to grips with this unit, this episode is going to walk you through everything you need to know, clearly, confidently, and with your mark scheme in mind. So grab a pen, get comfortable, and let's get started. Addictive behavior sits in Unit 3, Section A of the WJEC A-level psychology specification. It's a topic that brings together biological, psychological, and social explanations. And the examiners absolutely love to see candidates who can move fluently between all three levels of explanation. The assessment objective breakdown is important here. AO1 is worth 40% of your marks. That's your knowledge and understanding. But AO3, your evaluation and critical analysis, is worth a whopping 50%. So you need to do more than just describe. You need to evaluate, compare, and critically engage. Keep that in mind throughout everything we cover today. Let's start with the foundations. What actually is addiction? The most widely used framework in WJEC exams comes from Mark Griffiths, who in 1996 proposed his components model of addiction. Griffiths argued that all addictions, whether to substances like heroin or alcohol, or to behaviors like gambling, share six core components. And you absolutely must know all six. Let me walk you through them. First, salience. This is when the addictive activity becomes the most important thing in a person's life. It dominates their thinking, their feelings, and their behavior. Even when they're not engaging in the activity, they're thinking about it. Second, mood modification. This refers to the subjective change in feelings that people experience when they engage in the addictive behavior. It might be a buzz, a high, a sense of calm, or an escape. Third, tolerance. Over time, the person needs more and more of the substance or behavior to achieve the same effect. Think of a heroin user who needs increasingly larger doses to feel the same high. Fourth, withdrawal. When the person stops or reduces the activity, they experience unpleasant physical or psychological symptoms: shaking, sweating, anxiety, irritability. These withdrawal symptoms are a key diagnostic indicator. Fifth, conflict. This refers to the conflicts that arise as a result of the addiction, both interpersonal conflicts, like arguments with family and friends, and intrapsychic conflicts, meaning internal conflict and guilt within the person themselves. And sixth, relapse. This is the tendency to return to earlier patterns of addictive behavior after a period of abstinence, even after weeks, months, or years of being clean. A great memory hook for these six components is the acronym SMTWCR: salience, mood modification, tolerance, withdrawal, conflict, relapse. Or you can remember the phrase, "Some monkeys throw wild coconuts repeatedly." Silly, but it works. Now let's move on to the biological explanation of addiction, because this is where the real exam marks live. The biological approach focuses on the role of neurochemistry, specifically the neurotransmitter dopamine and the mesolimbic pathway in the brain. Here's how it works. Deep in the brain, in a region called the ventral tegmental area, or VTA, dopamine-producing neurons fire in response to rewarding stimuli. These neurons send dopamine along a pathway to the nucleus accumbens, which is sometimes called the brain's reward center. When dopamine floods the nucleus accumbens, we experience pleasure, motivation, and a sense of reward. This is completely normal. It happens when we eat, when we exercise, when we socialize. But addictive substances and behaviors hijack this system. Drugs like heroin, cocaine, and nicotine cause an abnormally large release of dopamine in the nucleus accumbens, far greater than any natural reward. Cocaine, for example, works by blocking the reuptake of dopamine at the synapse, meaning dopamine stays in the synaptic cleft for longer and continues to stimulate the postsynaptic receptor. The result is an intense artificial high. The brain begins to associate the drug with extreme pleasure, and the mesolimbic pathway becomes sensitized to drug-related cues. This leads us to the desensitization hypothesis, which is really important for WJEC. With repeated drug use, the brain actually reduces the number of dopamine receptors in the nucleus accumbens, a process called downregulation. This means the person needs more of the drug to achieve the same dopamine response, which explains tolerance. And when they stop using, dopamine activity falls below normal baseline levels, which explains the dysphoria and anhedonia of withdrawal. The person literally cannot feel pleasure from normal activities anymore. Now, how do we evaluate the biological explanation? This is where your AO3 marks come from. One strength is that the biological explanation is well supported by neuroscientific research. Volkow and colleagues used PET scanning to demonstrate reduced dopamine D2 receptor availability in the striatum of cocaine users compared to non-users, providing objective, empirical support. However, and this is a critical evaluation point, the biological explanation is reductionist. And here's the key. Don't just say it's reductionist, explain why that matters. If we focus solely on dopamine and the mesolimbic pathway, we fail to account for why some people exposed to the same substances never become addicted, while others do. Social factors like peer pressure, socioeconomic deprivation, and adverse childhood experiences are powerful predictors of addiction that a purely biological account cannot explain. This links to the nature-nurture debate. Addiction is best understood as an interaction between biological vulnerability and environmental triggers. Let's now look at psychological explanations. The learning theory account of addiction draws on both classical and operant conditioning. In classical conditioning, neutral stimuli, like the sight of a needle, a particular location, or even a smell, become conditioned stimuli that trigger cravings through their repeated association with the drug. This is why relapse is so common when people return to environments where they previously used. In operant conditioning, the drug use is positively reinforced by the pleasurable effects, the high, and negatively reinforced by the removal of withdrawal symptoms. This is a really common exam mistake, so listen carefully. Negative reinforcement is not punishment. Negative reinforcement is when a behavior is strengthened because it removes something unpleasant. In this case, taking heroin removes the painful withdrawal symptoms, which makes the person more likely to take heroin again. That is negative reinforcement. Social learning theory, developed by Bandura, adds another layer. People may initiate drug use through observation and imitation of role models, particularly peers or media figures, who appear to gain status or pleasure from the behavior. Vicarious reinforcement plays a key role here. Cognitive explanations focus on the role of irrational beliefs and cognitive biases. Beck and colleagues identified that addicted individuals often hold distorted beliefs about their ability to control their use, I can stop whenever I want, and about the necessity of the substance, I need this to cope. These cognitive distortions maintain the addiction and are a key target for CBT. Now let's talk about treatments, because the exam loves to ask you to evaluate modification therapies. There are two main categories, biological and psychological. Starting with biological treatments. Agonist substitution involves replacing the addictive substance with a safer substitute that acts on the same receptors. The classic example is methadone for heroin addiction. Methadone is a synthetic opioid that binds to the same mu opioid receptors as heroin, but it has a longer half-life, produces less euphoria, and can be administered in controlled doses. This reduces cravings and withdrawal symptoms, allowing the person to stabilize their life. Research by Maddock and colleagues in a 2009 Cochrane review found that methadone maintenance was significantly more effective than no treatment in retaining patients in treatment and reducing heroin use. However, methadone is itself addictive, and there are ethical concerns about simply substituting one dependency for another. Antagonist treatments work differently. Naltrexone, for example, blocks opioid receptors entirely. It occupies the receptor without activating it, so if the person takes heroin, they feel no effect. This removes the positive reinforcement of drug use. However, naltrexone requires extremely high motivation from the patient, and there is a serious risk. If a person relapses after a period of abstinence, their tolerance will have dropped significantly. If they then take the same dose they used before, they risk fatal overdose. Moving to psychological treatments. Cognitive behavioral therapy, or CBT, is one of the most evidence-based treatments for addiction. It works by identifying and challenging the cognitive distortions that maintain addictive behavior and by developing practical coping strategies for managing triggers and cravings. Carroll and colleagues in 1994 conducted a randomized controlled trial with cocaine users and found that CBT significantly reduced cocaine use compared to a control group, with effects that were maintained at 12-month follow-up. A key strength of CBT is that it addresses the underlying psychological mechanisms rather than just the symptoms. It gives people transferable skills. However, CBT requires significant time commitment and cognitive engagement, which may not be accessible to all patients, particularly those with severe addiction or comorbid mental health conditions. Now let me give you your exam tips and common mistakes section. This is where you can really pick up marks. Tip 1. When you're asked to evaluate a treatment or explanation, always use the PEEL structure. Point. State your evaluative point clearly. Evidence? Name a specific study with researcher and date. Explain. Explain what the study found and why it supports or challenges the explanation. Link. Connect it back to the question. Generic points like it is reductionist or it ignores free will only get you into the lower mark bands. You need to contextualize every evaluation point to addiction specifically. Tip 2. Always name the neurotransmitter and the brain region. Don't just say dopamine is released. Say dopamine is released from the ventral tegmental area and travels along the mesolimbic pathway to the nucleus accumbens. That level of specificity is what separates level 3 from level 4 answers. Tip 3. When applying learning theories, always distinguish between initiation, maintenance, and relapse. Classical conditioning best explains why cues trigger relapse. Operant conditioning best explains maintenance, the ongoing cycle of use. Social learning theory best explains initiation, why someone first tries a substance. Examiners credit candidates who make these distinctions explicitly. Tip 4. Use issues and debates as an evaluative framework, but make sure they're contextualized. Don't just say, this is deterministic. Say, the biological explanation is deterministic because it suggests that once the mesolimbic pathway has been hijacked by drug use, the individual has limited control over their behavior. This raises ethical concerns about how we treat addicted individuals. Are they morally responsible or are they victims of their neurochemistry? This has implications for policy and treatment. Tip 5, time management. For a 10 mark, describe question, allocate 15 minutes. For a 15 mark, evaluate question, allocate 25 minutes. Don't spend all your time on description. The AO3 marks are where the majority of the credit lies. Now let's do a quickfire recall quiz. I'll ask a question, pause the podcast, think of your answer, then I'll give you the key points. Ready? Question 1. Name all 6 of Griffith's components of addiction. Pause now. The answer is salience, mood modification, tolerance, withdrawal, conflict, relapse. Remember, some monkeys throw wild coconuts repeatedly. Question 2. What is the role of the nucleus accumbens in addiction? Pause now. It is the brain's reward center, located in the mesolimbic pathway. Dopamine floods the nucleus accumbens in response to rewarding stimuli, including addictive drugs, producing feelings of pleasure, and reinforcing drug-seeking behavior. Question 3. What is the difference between agonist substitution and antagonist treatment? Pause now. Agonist substitution, like methadone, activates the same receptors as the addictive drug, reducing cravings and withdrawal. Antagonist treatment, like naltrexone, blocks the receptors, preventing the drug from having any effect. Question 4. Why is negative reinforcement important in explaining addiction maintenance? Pause now. Negative reinforcement occurs when a behavior is strengthened by the removal of an unpleasant stimulus. In addiction, taking the drug removes withdrawal symptoms, which are deeply unpleasant, thereby reinforcing drug-taking behavior and making it more likely to recur. And that brings us to our summary and sign-off. Today, we've covered the key foundations of addictive behaviors for WJETA level psychology. We've looked at Griffith's 6 components model, the biological explanation centered on dopamine and the mesolimbic pathway, the desensitization hypothesis, learning theory accounts including classical conditioning, operant conditioning and social learning theory, cognitive explanations and modification therapies including methadone, naltrexone, and CBT. We've also covered the most common exam mistakes and how to structure your evaluation using Peel. The most important thing to remember is this. Your AO3 marks are 50% of the total. Every evaluation point needs a named study, a specific explanation, and a link back to the question. Generic evaluation will not get you into the top mark band. Good luck with your revision. You've got this. I'll see you in the next episode of Psych Revise.